And welcome back to the Bicycle Indiana podcast, Life Behind Bars. Margaret B. here with Bicycle Indiana, executive director. Super stoked about this discussion. I have been wanting to interview these two for a while. One, just getting to know this program, but also getting to know these two individuals on a professional level and what they're doing for the state of Indiana for trails is something incredible that I want the state to be aware of. So I hope everyone enjoys this discussion. There's a little bit of information in the description of our podcast, so please take a moment to look at that if you have any specific questions about this particular program that I'm going to talk to two guys about. Other than that, this is our 20th episode. Can you believe it? I am really excited, as I use that word a lot, to have 20 episodes for the first season of our Life Behind Bars podcast that I decided to start. And I hope everyone really enjoyed the discussions, the recordings, and the different people that I interviewed across the state, from, you know, riding at any age to interviewing about the Little 500 to even talking about other nonprofit organizations that are changing and breaking barriers in the cycling and pedestrian world for our state. So I hope you enjoy and have a great day. All right. Welcome back to the Bicycle Indiana podcast, Life Behind Bars. Margaret B. here, executive director, really stoked. I usually use the word excited, but I'll say stoked today to have two gentlemen on the call that work with the Indiana DNR. And to talk about some really great things that they're doing. I've been excited about this call because, one, I really have learned a lot about their jobs and what they do. But I think it's something really important that the state of Indiana listens to and can learn about. So welcome, Ross and Gary, to the show. But I'm going to first put Gary on the spot. Do you want to take a moment to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm Gary Schultz. I am the trails coordinator with the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. And so with that, I work with managing grants for some of the next level trails projects we have around the state, and also work with the Indiana Trails Finder and mapping open trails that we have throughout the state of Indiana.
Awesome. And are you originally from Indiana, and you live here in Indiana, in Indianapolis?
So I grew up in Fort Wayne. I've also lived in Terre Haute and several other places around the country. And yes, now I live in Indianapolis.
Very cool. Well, welcome. Ross, you're up.
Yeah, thanks, Margaret, for having us on. I'm Ross Teepee, the Trails Manager for the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. My main role is administering and kind of serving as the program director of the Next Level Trails program. Originally, I'm from Elkhart, Indiana, in northern Indiana. Spent a few years down in Bloomington, and now I live just outside of downtown Indianapolis on the Near East Side.
Very cool. Well, like I said earlier, I'm really excited to talk about the stuff that you guys do, the work you do, because it's really important, one, for the state and bike and pedestrian, but also there's a lot that goes on that you two do is with your staff and working on getting trails built and funded throughout the state. So I'm going to ask the really dumb question and dive deep into this. I'm going to put Ross on the spot. What is the Indiana DNR? There might be somebody out there that's listening that doesn't know what the Indiana DNR is.
Yeah, the Indiana Department of Natural Resources is a state agency with many divisions within it. So some popular ones, what we sit in is Indiana State Parks, but there's Indiana Division of Water that has, you know, regulatory powers. There's Indiana Department of Natural Resources Division of Fish and Wildlife for, you know, hunting passes, entomology. Really, it's a huge state agency with many, many different expertise across the divisions.
Yeah. And how many people are in, I guess, your department? How many people do you have on staff?
So we're the Community Grants and Trails section of Indiana State Parks. Indiana State Parks, huge, obviously employees all over the state at properties, but our section specifically, there are 1, 2, 3, what, Gary, 8 of us?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I think there are 8 of us.
And I met some new faces at your charrette, which I'm going to ask about later, which was great because I really thought it was just you two. And I didn't know that you had such a great staff. So awesome. There is a question that I do want to ask, and maybe Gary and Ross, you can both kind of tag team this, but I specifically want to dive into the Next Level Trails program, because a lot of people talk about it. A lot of people see the awards, the ribbon cuttings, the different, you know, information that's on the internet. But Gary, do you want to kind of start us off and what the NLT, the Next Level Trails program, is?
Sure. So the Next Level Trails is a program that is an initiative of Governor Holcomb. And the funding was from a 2018 renegotiated toll road lease. And so there have been 4 rounds of funding now for 89 projects around the state of Indiana that are through the Next Level Trails grant funding program.
Nice. And so you said 89 projects. I remember, Ross, you said that you guys hit the 100th mile. Is that correct this year?
Yeah. So of those 89 projects, 41 are now complete since the program started in early 2019. So that's about 109 miles of open trail that have actually been built with help from the funding. I think that's split between about 30 miles of, I was looking at today, 30 miles of mountain bike trail and about 80 miles of your standard kind of multi-use path, path paved trail. So good mix across the state.
No, that's incredible. And I'm on your website right now, and I'll drop that information in the description. But I guess let's really kind of dive in. And Ross, how does somebody, if let's say I'm an advocate and I'm like, an area that I want a trail to be built, maybe on an old rail trail or something. How does somebody even begin to consider connecting with the DNR to get funding?
Yeah. So as of now, we don't have like a round 5 of the grant program set up, but previously, yeah, our team major roles in administering these competitive grant rounds. And so on the website, we have items like grant applicant handbooks, kind of checklists, pretty much items that you need to have to apply for a DNR grant. So these kind of the big items of this are, do you have a cost breakdown for your trail? Do you have a route for your trail? Then the things our staff does as we dig in through those applications, we really dig into eligibility. So if we funded this project, could it actually be built? So big questions we ask are, what is the land situation for this project? Do you own, if it's a rail trail corridor, do you own the corridor? Do you have to purchase parcels from landowners?
Sure.
Where are you at in that stage? So our staff goes through pretty extensive 2 to 3 month like vetting process for these application rounds. And we get, you know, 100, 200, 300 plus PDFs sent to us as applications for us to sift through for months. And there's a lot of back and forth with grantees of or potential grantees on making sure, okay, can the DNR invest 1, 2, 3, up to $5 million grants for these projects?
Sure. And so I wrote this question down specifically to the Next Level Trails program. What are your particular roles? Obviously, you kind of talked a little bit about that, Ross, but Gary, specifically, what is your particular role when it comes to some of these grant applications in this program?
So once the projects are awarded, then between our team, we are all assigned some of the projects to be the administrator for. And so that basically involves distributing the funding over various phases. So if funding is needed for land acquisition, design and engineering, and then construction, we kind of separate those phases out. We distribute funding. Each project is required to have at least 20% match from the local entity, either a city or county or a nonprofit trails advocacy group. And so we kind of distribute the funds, and then we reconcile the funds to see what the money was spent on. And then we also review the plans to make sure that they all meet the state of Indiana guidelines for trail construction with the NLT projects.
Got it. And Ross, obviously you kind of talked a little bit about, you know, your role. Are there any other specific things that you want to talk about with your particular role with some of these grant applications in the program?
I'd say our team, one thing that is quite time consuming, but it's enjoyable, is that as the DNR is investing a lot of money in these projects, our staff, we make sure to review the design and engineering plans for these projects before they go out to construction bid. So, no one on our team, we're not engineers, but we know to look for a handful of items that we want to see on plan. So, you know, if you apply for a grant and you say it's going to be a 10-foot wide asphalt trail, that's a kind of a big one. We check in the plans. Oh, is it 10 feet wide, or do they have to narrow it down to 8 feet? Safety signage. So, so many road crossings for some of these projects, some of them, a bit more difficult than others. So, you know, does this require a hot crossing, some sort of flashing lights? Are crosswalks built to standards? Does it meet ADA requirements? So a lot of things we have to check off to make sure, once again, you know, a big DNR NLT stamp is going on these projects. So they have to meet standards.
Sure. And I don't know if you guys have listened to some of the episodes or know my background, but I came from getting kids on bikes and creating school-based mountain bike teams across the state. And you could have a varsity letter mountain bike, you know, sport for your school, which is really neat and kind of makes you want to think, like, why didn't we have that as kids? But I would travel around to different trail systems for mountain biking specifically and survey the parks to determine if the EMS access and the risk management part of it was safe for the children to ride and race, you know, alone or with family, or even if a volunteer, you know, how quickly can I get to somebody if they went down with a heart attack or something like that? And it really woke me up and helped me understand how parks are managed, but also the lack maybe of EMS access and potential risk management. And I appreciate what you just explained, Ross, because that's something I think a lot of people don't realize that goes into this whole process and what you do and what makes this program great.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give an example here because I wrote this down, and sorry, my paper is full of questions. But a typical application, for example, long ago, the Park Trails Alliance, shout out to them, the PTA out by me, Rockville area, they had submitted an application. This was probably round two, I want to say, maybe round one, but they got denied and they were a little upset. But at the same time, I'm 100% sure you gave them great feedback on how to then apply maybe for the next round to see if they could get funding. But what does a typical application kind of look like? Not the nitty and gritty, but just general, I guess, information that an organization could provide. Gary, do you want to take that one?
Well, I would just start with saying that for each round of NLT applications, we had many more applicants than we were able to fund. So there's a lot of good projects out there, and sometimes we are not able to fund a project that might be a very good project, but another project might score higher than that. So I would just kind of start with that. And then on the application, yeah, it will list kind of a rationale for the project, where applicants can give a description of how this trail will fit into their existing trail system, if it's extending an existing trail or connecting to some other trail, or if it's connecting a neighborhood to a school. So we have a lot of that kind of description. The applications look at the financial aspect. How much is the trail expected to cost, and how much money the applicant is hoping to get through the grant process. Ross, what other things are on the application?
Big thing is letters of intent from landowners. Oh, yeah. So if you're saying we need to buy 15 parcels to build this 2-mile trail, we would want to first know where are those parcels, who are the owners, have they agreed to this, things like that. That's a big one we check off. I honestly, one of the biggest things that's just helpful to us is a very clear map of what is literally your project. Mm-hmm. And on that map, make note of anything, kind of local amenities, attractions that are near that project. Because as I said, you know, our staff, we dive deep into the eligibility of the application for several months. And then if you survive the eligibility review, we present your project to a multi-agency rating committee.
Oh.
And so essentially our staff, we become experts of the project. We can, you know, describe exactly where it goes, which, you know, it follows this road, turns here, connects to this. Then we present that usually 10 to 15 minute presentations to a multi-agency state review team. And they're the ones that actually score the projects. So, there's scoring metrics such as, does your project connect or extend existing trails? Does your project connect city, towns, and counties, you know, that regional aspect? There's a handful of other scoring metrics. And so they actually they assign a numerical value to those. And then we see how you rank amongst the 50, 60, 70 applicants.
Sure. That's really interesting and great to hear. I wrote this down. What are some common, not struggles on your end, but what are some, I don't want to use the word mistakes, but what are some common things that maybe don't fulfill the eligibility or the requirements, and then you have to turn that application down?
I would say one thing is match value. So we require a 20% match. Sometimes I'd say someone's match value could be ineligible. And so they fall below that 20% match value. And we just simply have to make that ineligible. Number two, land, not being able to acquire the land for the project. Those are the killer ones.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I remember with the PTA, as I used as an example before, I remember they were having difficulty with the landowner that the trail was next to a fence, or that a fence needed to be built, and the owner didn't want to have the fence. And it was just this big hot mess, and they were trying to figure it out. And I knew that that was a struggle as well. Gary, do you have any input? You don't have to, but.
We've had a couple applications where the applicant was not exactly sure the route they wanted the trail to take. And so it's kind of like they said, well, we want to have a trail in our community. But by the time we get to the application, you kind of need to have laid out exactly where you think the trail will go. That's not to say that there might not be some changes as the progress goes along, but sure. That's one issue we ran into a couple times.
Sure. Yeah. I wrote this question down, and I feel like it's kind of a silly question, and I hope I worded it right. But what's the difference between a grant such as what the NLT provides, what you guys provide, versus other grants? Like, for example, when I went to DC this year to go lobby at the Big Bike Summit, that is on the federal level, right? And so I guess my question is obviously your grant program is a state level grant, and what makes it different than the other type of grants that maybe people could obtain?
Yeah. So on the federal side, off the top of my head, kind of the popular bike ped grants are the Transportation Alternatives Program, federal grant program, that funds, you know, protected bike lanes, funds multi-use paths as well. RAISE grants, that's a new kind of large scale one that's come out of, I think, recent infrastructure bills. There's congestion mitigation, air quality grants that build bike ped things. I would say the big difference between these federal grants and Next Level Trails, a state funded grant, is federal grants are reimbursed based programs. So essentially the grantee would send in all their expenses. They would get reimbursed with the federal funds. Whereas Next Level Trails, a benefit of the program is that funds are provided up front. And so this helps projects move along faster. True. And I mean, these are large sums of money. Not every municipality, and especially nonprofits, can front $3 million for construction.
Yeah.
And the award timeline for federal grants is just a lot longer. So you could get awarded a 2023 TA grant, and that might not be a part of construction until 2030 or 2028. Wow. I'm not super familiar with TA and how the program works exactly.
Sure.
You know, it's more of NDOT's world. But the quick turnaround, nonprofits are not eligible for a lot of these federal grants. That's a big one.
And interesting.
Indiana has so many nonprofit trail groups that you're familiar with.
Yeah.
They need, if they were trying to get a grant, they would need, you know, the county or town to apply.
Oh, versus them. That was my question. Why weren't they eligible if they're a nonprofit? But okay. So they have to apply in that way.
Yeah. You need a local public agency.
Got it.
So whereas instead these trail groups can apply directly to DNR, they can sign a state grant agreement with us and there's no eligibility concerns whatsoever.
Sure. Sure. Gary, did you want to add anything about kind of federal versus state level? And then there's even grants that are not part of federal or state as well.
Well, Ross, did you want to maybe mention like the various places that the funding has come from for the four different NLT rounds?
Yeah, well, I guess a little bit of background on this state money that exists. So Next Level Trails is a $180 million program started in 2018. So if people are familiar with the toll road in northern Indiana between Chicago, Elkhart, Angola. The state renegotiated that toll road lease back in 2018. That renegotiation of that lease gave really basically a cash surplus given to the state. And that was about $1 billion. So that really started Governor Holcomb's Next Level Connections initiative. So with that, you know, there's, I think, and then 90 million of that billion was allocated for Next Level Trails. So that was like the original seed money. And then funding came in the next few state budgets. So post COVID, there was the American Rescue Plan Act dollars that states got. So 60 million of that was provided to Next Level Trails. And then in the 2023 budget, another $30 million was provided by the state legislature. So all state funds. No real federal strings attached to them. So it gave the DNR us a real blank slate for a grant program of to design it.
Taking a little pause in the discussion, I thought I'd talk a little bit about the different awards with the Next Level Trails program that Ross and Gary mentioned. But some of the big projects, if you go to their website, again, information is in our description, but there were four rounds of funding that was awarded through the program. And round one, for example, there were 17 trail projects, including 10 regionally significant and 7 locally significant projects announced in May of 2019. More than 42 miles of trails were to be developed in 17 different Indiana counties. So that was round one. Round two, there were 18 projects, including 10 regional and then also 8 locally in March of 2021. And there were more than 70 miles of trails to be developed in 16 Indiana counties. That was round two. Round three, there were 38 trail projects, including 17 regional and 21 locally announced in April of 2022. And then they state more than 77 miles of trail to be developed in 34 Indiana counties. If we're seeing something, or if you can listen, there is definitely a trend here with the numbers. Round four, which is the most recent round, there were 14 trail projects, including 7 regionally and then also 7 locally. And that was announced in December of 2023. So then more than 27 miles of trails to be developed in 12 Indiana counties. So really great stuff. Again, information link for particular award announcements and more if you want to know dollar signs and data wise. Link is in our description, but check it out. Really cool stuff. Let's go back to the conversation. Okay, my next question, Gary, did you have anything else you wanted to add to specifically that or no?
No, I think that's good.
Okay. My next question is, and I think both of you can easily answer this, but what are the particular goals for this program? I know it's kind of coming to an end, but what are the, I guess, the goals and the mission for this program? Obviously, to build more trails and provide funding to, you know, entities that are trying to bring accessibility. But are there any particular goals that you would like to let our listeners know that the NLT and the Indiana DNR is providing or hoping to accomplish?
Yeah, I think the main goal of the program in one sentence would be to encourage collaboration across cities, towns, counties across the state to make connections, trail connections specifically, between and within communities. So pre-Next Level Trails, the state of trails in Indiana had, I mean, was a great trail system, but there were some pretty obvious gaps within the system. And so really the goal of Next Level Trails was, let's build upon the existing trail system and connect Hoosiers to other communities and things within their communities. So I would say purposeful connections. You know, there's great trails that are, let's say, your loop trails, like a closed loop park trail. But
sure.
Big goal of this program was how can we provide, you know, I want to get from A to B type projects so that I can go downtown, I can go to a restaurant, I can go to the park, to the school, to the library, multiple local and regional amenities on a trail, which is, you know, infrastructure that is built for, you know, all ages and all abilities when you think of biking.
Sure. Something that I mentioned on another episode, I went out to the Greencastle area, which is Putnam County, and two individuals who are parents and they want to bike their, you know, to school with their kids or walk to school. And they had me come ride their routes and kind of have me experience what they experience as family community members trying just to get to school or to the store. And it was really eye-opening for me because I live in Terre Haute and I'm 100% comfortable with riding on the road because Terre Haute, as you, Gary, you've lived here, there's not a lot of trails or sidewalks that can really connect unless you're in the real city downtown. And so it was really nice to experience that. And they're trying to get different commissioners and different political figures out riding with them in the Greencastle area near DePauw to really experience it as well, because it's different than just, let's say, driving your car around, right?
Oh yeah. Get a better view of everything.
Yeah. Gary, did you want to add anything about the mission or any goals in particular to share with our listeners?
I would just say, yeah, that the idea of making connections between communities, we all certainly can enjoy trails for recreational purposes, you know, like loops in a park or in our state parks or things. But the Next Level Trails, I think, is particularly focused on active transportation, of being able to connect by foot or by bicycle to destinations in a community that perhaps in the past were only accessible by car.
Sure. No, that's great. Okay. My next topic, since we're kind of talking about different trail systems and projects that you've worked on or that you've talked about, let's talk about the event you just had, which was the DNR Trail Charrette. And I'm going to be honest, you're going to laugh right now, but when you guys invited me, I texted a friend, Dustin New, who's my board president, and I said, what's a charrette? And so I had to Google what a charrette was. And I was like, oh, I just have never heard that word or used it. So let's talk about your charrette, shall we? So last week, we had an event that you two hosted with your staff, and we talked about trail systems with like 100 different trail organization and advocates like me in a room. So, Ross, you want to kind of start off the conversation and what the event's purpose was and what it was?
Yeah, I guess I could start with a little bit of a history background. So the Indiana DNR, we every 5 years write the statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plan, the SCORP. We have a dedicated, yeah, well, long one. We have a dedicated planner in our office that writes the SCORP.
Okay.
Within the SCORP, since starting in, I think, 2000, there has been a trails plan. That trails plan has varied in, I would say, detail over time of the plan has included goals for trail development across the state. Sometimes it's focused a bit more on just what's the state of trails in Indiana in terms of mileage, what's under construction, possible projects across the state. So every 5 years, the trails plan lives within the SCORP. And starting in 2006, the Indiana Visionary Trails System was developed. So this Indiana Visionary Trail System, at the time, it was existing and proposed trail corridors across the state. So a mixture of kind of far out ideas of, I want to connect this town to this town or this part of the state to this part of the state. And so, you know, this Visionary Trail System map was created. And as you were at the event, you saw all those maps across the room that had these, you know, 100-mile corridors stretching across the state. So our staff hasn't revisited that map since 2006 in terms of we haven't edited any of the routes. We haven't added new routes. Mm-hmm. Removed some routes where there hasn't been progress. And so we knew here in 2024 and 2025, we need to revisit that map. So look at new corridors, what progress has been made really in 20 years. There's been a lot of money that's gone into trails, especially in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And so the best way to do that was invite every trail person from across the state. And we wanted to gather information from them because they know their regions, they know their cities, towns, and counties. And at the DNR, we have a good idea of what's happening across the state, but it's hard to keep track of everything. So, it was really our way to gather information from everyone.
And for our listeners, it was a big conference room that had 101, I think is what Erica said, individuals all advocating for trails or working on getting more trails in the state of Indiana. And then you broke into different groups or different corridors based on the region. And there were maps on the wall of detailed inventory that you had been aware of for trail systems. So my next question, Gary, and maybe Ross too, what did you guys learn from that? I do know that you obtained a lot of trail updates that you were able to now update your inventory is what I gathered. Is there anything in particular that you would like to let our listeners know that you learned from this charrette?
Well, we spent a lot of time, gathering data and information to see what progress has been made, to also see if there's been progress made that we were not aware of. And this will take a few months now to kind of go through and see what people's responses were. You know, we had some large maps on the wall that people made comments or drew lines. We also had individual sheets of paper that people could write down their comments about what progress has been made or ideas that they have. So the next step in order to update that state visionary trails map will be sifting through that information and see what we've learned. So we haven't done much with that information yet because that'll take some time to compile and put together.
Definitely. Ross, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, just post charrette. I mean, right now in one of our offices, there's a stack of those 15 maps, 100 plus pieces of paper. It's just sitting there in Dale's office. And yeah, we know.
You got to look at it.
Yeah.
What was, I guess I'll first ask Gary, what was the top comment that really caught your eye from the individuals that joined that charrette? Good, bad, whatever, exciting?
Well, there's a lot of excitement for the existing state visionary trails that we have and some of the projects that have made good progress. So we had a lot of comments about the Marquette Greenway, which will connect Chicago through Indiana up into Michigan. The Pokabash Trail, which will connect Pokagon State Park in Steuben County all the way down to Abachi State Park. The Cardinal Greenway, which is a long-standing long trail in Indiana that has a gap in the middle that people are looking at how that'll be connected. Just a lot of enthusiasm, I think, for the existing corridors, and then trying to figure out how we can make more connections with the communities that were represented at the Charette.
Sure. Ross, what was your most exciting comment, maybe?
Yeah, I feel like there were a handful of comments from some counties where we really have like little to no data in terms of, we don't have any existing trails mapped, planned trails mapped. And I can't remember the counties off the top of my head, but there are quite a few that they noted that they have a county trails plan, and they can send us that data. So it was just good to see that, like, sometimes you can look at trails inventory maps and focus on maybe the larger metro areas of, you know, Indy, central Indiana, Fort Wayne, kind of northwest Indiana.
Sure.
But you do realize, like, there's extensive planning and work happening in some of the least populated counties in the state. And that's great to see.
Definitely. And I was talking to Erica, who works with you, that I have a buddy that's up. He owns Buckskin Bikes up in Anderson. And I'm sure I emailed you guys his information, but they just got like $4 million to connect Anderson to Noblesville. And so he wanted to join the Charette, but couldn't. And I'm hoping that you two can connect and see how you can work together. But he's been working his butt off to get that situation figured out.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. This is going to be, maybe, I don't know if you can answer this quite yet, but with the whole election over, we've got a new governor. What's next? Do you have an answer? I know somebody on your staff, what did he say? He said at the beginning of the Charette, I don't know. I don't have an answer, or something he said, but what's next that's going to happen now that we have a new governor?
Yeah, I'll use Dale's words of, you know, just as well as us.
Yeah.
Basically, our role is to manage our existing projects. I mean, 41 are complete, 89 are active. So there's next level trails will exist in terms of existing projects that will go into construction 2025, 26, 27. In terms of future money, which is an upcoming budget session. This is a long session.
Correct,
yeah. The state legislator. If money is allocated, yeah, who knows? We'd like to think the program is really popular. And I mean, we've awarded grants all across the state, but yeah, you really just don't know.
Gary, you have anything to add on that, or no? No comment?
Well, we just encourage people to contact their state legislators and let them know of their support for trails. I mean, we certainly have seen that there is a demand for it, in the fact that we have many more applications than we are able to fund. So there is a interest and demand for trails around the state. And we just have to see then what happens next with the funding.
Definitely. Okay. Next question is kind of, we talked about a little bit before, but how can somebody get involved? Whether if they want to specifically help you guys, I don't know if you have volunteers that can help you. But I guess we did kind of talk a bit about the next level trails, the steps to apply, but words of advice to anyone that wants to start even considering looking for funding. How do they even begin?
Wherever you live, I think it's important maybe just to find like-minded folks to discuss your potential ideas. And then I would say approach your local, you know, the government officials and, have open conversations with them about why trails are important to you, why you think it'd be a good investment for your community. So many trail projects in the state, especially some started by nonprofits. I mean, they started with a couple people sitting around looking at a map of, hey, it'd be cool if that old railroad was a trail. And so,
sure.
These things can take a long time, but just stick to it.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Speaking of taking a long time, what's a typical timeline? I meant to ask this earlier. What's a typical timeline for, let's say I'm an organization, I want to apply. You obviously have deadlines, you have certain different rounds with application deadlines, but what's a typical kind of vague?
Yeah. So if we had, if there was a grant, I say our last grant round was July 2023. And so we try to provide a little bit of a notice that, okay, there's going to be a round four of Next Level Trails, July 2023. The application window will close August 2023. So we essentially give folks a month to send in their applications.
Okay.
As I said, we take about 2 to 3 months to review those for eligibility. And then another month to kind of get the award process over with and score the projects. Once someone signs their state grant agreement, we typically, for the state grant agreements, their contract with the DNR, we set 4-year maximum grant timelines with them. So ideally, the project is done in 4 years. I'd say most of our projects do. You know, you never know what could delay a project, but mm-hmm. we've seen projects that as soon as they sign their state grant agreement, they are very close to finishing design. They don't have land. They can bid the project soon and they can be wrapped up in about a year. But 1 to 3 years.
Okay.
For our projects.
Gary, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, it varies a lot, I think, depending on what the what the progress of the project already is. So, for example, I have one of our round four projects that just sent me their final design this week. I know we also have a round four project that hasn't gone anywhere beyond just signing the grant agreement. So we have some projects just when they apply that are already further along in the process and are ready to go. And we have others that, you know, still have to figure out the design, figure out land acquisition issues. And so, yeah, it can vary a lot, I think.
Definitely. Okay. My next question is going to be kind of tricky. What are some, okay, as you, as not the projects, but you as the DNR employee, what are some struggles that you face in this particular job? If ones that you have to share, you got anything to share with our listeners? Because obviously there's ups and downs of any job, but what are some things that you find that maybe are struggles? I know. I can ask you to play music.
Gary, anything immediately you can think of?
Yeah, so there's been, sometimes there's just issues with getting, with communicating between, you know, some communities have a full-time person in public works or someone that works with trails. Mm-hmm. Other communities or counties we're working with, you know, one person wears a lot of different hats. And so there's kind of a variety of ability of people to respond. So sure. Sometimes there's just a delay in people getting back because they might have a lot of other responsibilities they have going on at the same time. Another challenge I think we've had is some of the different entities that work on the projects. And for example, there might be a route change where a project was expected to go one way and then some landowner who had previously been supportive maybe changes their mind. And then the trail has to kind of find a different route. So almost every project has some kind of challenge or something that was maybe unexpected.
Sure. Ross, anything?
Yeah. Piggybacking off the maybe like the organizational styles of different grantees, some, there might be one project that is incredibly straightforward. Everything, you know, this isn't someone's first project. Even just like simple, like file management and going through, you know, hundreds of PDFs versus a project that's just really straightforward. And so, sure. Yeah, it totally varies.
Definitely.
But we're lucky that it is a fun job. We get to see trails across the state. So, yeah.
And I bet it's neat too to see the different styles, like you said, of how people apply. And I remember going back to the Park Trails Alliance, the engineer, I mean, it was this giant binder of I don't even know what was in there, but he was very particular about how things were presented, but then he learned from maybe getting denied how to present things differently for the next round. And it was really neat to kind of see that progress and how organizations were able to take what you gave back for feedback and improve for potential funding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Great memory. Think about this right now, gentlemen. What's your maybe favorite project that you've worked on or a good memory that you want to share with our listeners? I'll add Jeopardy music. Don't worry. I did that in the last call.
Favorite project.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of projects that I've seen you two participate in. And I see Gary traveling all over the state at Trails based on his Facebook.
I would say the most recent extensions of the Marquette Greenway in Northwest Indiana, particularly Burns Harbor and Portage. Mm-hmm. I think that area is just really interesting and really pretty for trails and such a unique spot because you've got some of the most pristine national park land in the country near the lakefront, well-preserved areas, totally tree covered, directly adjacent to some of the heaviest industrial, EPA Superfund sites in the world. Mm-hmm. And it makes this for a unique setting, a challenging setting for construction. But the final products of those two projects between Portage and Burns Harbor is really pretty. A lot of retaining wall needed, a couple bridges. Unique project in a cool corridor of, connecting Chicago to New Buffalo, Michigan.
And for our listeners, if you haven't been up to the northwest part of the state, they've got an incredible trail system up there and have been working very hard on that. Gary, favorite memory?
It's hard to pick a favorite project. It has been fun to see all different areas of the state and the different projects going on, but I guess I will fall back on being a Fort Wayne native. I really am excited about the Puffer Belly Trail in Fort Wayne and the various phases it's gone through. It's exciting because I've seen this develop from being nothing and then going to where major sections of it are complete. I think it has the potential to become similar to the Monon Trail here in Indianapolis, which has really allowed a lot of new development. It's been kind of a catalyst for economic development, and it's exciting to see people get enthusiastic about being out on the trail and having it near where they live, or finding people that actually travel considerable distances to ride these trails. And I guess the other part that I am excited about with the Puffer Belly Trails, that is very important for Fort Wayne and Allen County, but it also is part of that 81-mile Pocobash trail connecting the state parks there. And to see that, I believe, going through four counties. And so it's exciting to see that Puffer Belly Trail is one segment of a bigger trail that also has at least four total segments between those counties now.
Sure.
I do have one memory, Margaret.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Is this summer, I would say, the groundbreaking for the Monon South Trail.
That was on my list. That was on my list.
I assume we'd maybe get to that. But seeing that groundbreaking happen so fast compared
It was very fast.
The project was announced. That was a pretty cool moment because, we've seen that corridor be an abandoned rail line with rails on the track, and looking at it on Google Street View over the past year, and then boom, it's under construction.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, the Monon South. So Gary, do you want to let our listeners know, one, where the Monon South is and maybe a little bit of the data behind, like the mileage? I know that there's some very specific things of what it's connecting.
Yeah, so the Monon South Trail will eventually be the state's longest recreational trail, about 62 miles on a former railroad bed there. And so that goes from New Albany and then up through five counties there in southern Indiana.
Wow. Yeah, and I'm looking at a map right now, and I can drop some more information. But I agree, Ross. It was such a quick, to me, turnaround that things were just happening.
Yeah, the project was officially announced in January 2023 at Governor Holcomb's State of the State address. And his announcement was that there would be a $29.5 million DNR investment in the corridor. So that $29.5 million, it's broken down to $5.5 million to literally purchase the corridor, the contiguous 62.3 miles from Mitchell to New Albany that was abandoned by CSX. So that was acquired via a rail banking process. So $5.5 million for the corridor. And then another $24 million was there to begin development of that 62.3 miles. So $24 million does not build a 62-mile trail, but it does kickstart development. So phase one is under construction right now. Construction crews are right now in Borden and I think Pekin and Orleans. And so 20 miles under construction. Some of that is set to be complete by the end of the year, with the rest of that 20 miles will be completed throughout 2025.
And is this trail all paved? Is it some crushed limestone?
Phase one is 10 miles of asphalt, 10 miles of crushed stone. So the idea was, with the corridor, it really had like a blank slate of where development could begin. So the idea that the DNR agreed upon with the trail managers, which will be Radius Indiana Economic Development Organization and the City of New Albany, was to start development. Let's build sections of trail in each town within their city limits, and then over time try to connect those towns. So in the actual city limits of some of these towns, which is Mitchell, Orleans, Pekin, Salem, and Borden, that's asphalt. As soon as you get outside of the city limits, it's crushed, firm crushed limestone, which your grant dollars just go a longer way with crushed limestone, lower construction cost. And it's, I mean, when done right, a great surface, totally compact. So you can ride a road bike on it. There's trails all across the country that are, you've probably been on them. That are great.
So I just wrote this down, and then I'll end the call with my favorite question that I've been anticipating and asking: maintenance. So how does that all play into everything? Because obviously the trails need to be maintained. If it's on, if it's a city trail, the city would probably maintain it. Out here by me at Griffin, I know that the NLT provided a loop for Griffin, and obviously the park manager, Rich Moore, maintains that. But how does that, like, for example, for the Monon South, 62 miles, how does that get maintained?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. And so specifically the larger section. So as I mentioned, Radius Indiana, which is the economic development organization in southern Indiana, they are the owners and managers of that section of the corridor. There's a new trail group in southern Indiana called Southern Indiana Trailways. And they're still in the early days of becoming a trail group and finding volunteers, finding friend groups. They're just in the early days of, okay, how will we maintain this over time? Sure. Just like any other trail group, it starts with, this guy has a chainsaw, and he lives down the road from the corridor, and yeah, he'll go down there and his pickup truck and get it. So yeah, it is a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. The new bike park out in Lebanon, Stone Eater Bike Park, I've been part of for a while. And there was a gentleman, that was, I would say more, not upset, I don't want to use the word upset, but more concerned about the use of the landfill land next to his property. And over 5 years, because it took them so long to get this property finally up and running, the guy is helping the park out and driving around and making sure people aren't, trashing it or doing bad things. And he's kind of become this like trail father, right, to it. And so I tell Kevin Crew, that hire him, get him in, So Gary, do you have anything you want to add about the Monon South?
I think that covers most of the highlights of it. It's a very exciting project I think, for the state of Indiana, and I think will be a great opportunity for recreation and then also for economic development for the communities that it will run through, and hopefully will be opportunity to make more trail connections as it is built out.
Absolutely. Is there anything else you two want to add that I did not cover about what you do for a living and how you change the trail systems and get people out? Anything?
I think we covered a lot of it.
I told you I'd cover a whole hour, but wait, just wait. I have one more question. It's the only reason I want to ask this, because I want Gary to talk about what he does for fun. So what's a fun fact that you want to share? Just a fun fact with our listeners. It's just because I want Gary to talk about him playing the organ.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a little shift in topics, but so my in my previous career, I'm also a church musician, and so I direct choirs and play the organ, and so that's what I went to undergrad for, and so I'm able to continue doing that on a part-time basis. In my particular denomination, there are fewer opportunities for full-time employment in that field. And so that's what kind of led me to go pursue my master's degree in urban planning from Ball State. And that's how I got into to this position. But yes, there's still remnants of my former life in my church music activity.
Well, we're happy that you're part of the Indiana DNR staff. Ross, do you have anything fun to add? You're probably thinking, I can't top that.
Fun facts about me. The past 5 years, I'm a big soccer person. I play soccer year round.
Okay, go on.
I have a good group of friends that we've been on the same co-ed soccer team for 5 years now in Indy, and we've won our 77 championship like four times in the past couple of years. So I'm always down to talk soccer if anybody's. Yeah.
Well, I played soccer in college and in high school, and I tried playing soccer maybe like 4 years ago indoor, and I couldn't move the next day. It's the lateral movements that just killed me, because I'd just been biking and maybe running occasionally, but I tried and it was rough for us.
No, that's noticeable every year
as we get older. You too. I appreciate it. Even asking the off topic fun fact questions about you guys. Really super excited again to talk about this work that you're doing. The state of Indiana appreciates you. I will say that on behalf of everyone. I really enjoy watching what you two do, but also learning a lot more about what's possible and also what's upcoming for the next couple of years. So, I'll drop your information and more specifics about your program, but also your information. And if people have questions, they'll connect, but I appreciate you two joining the call.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Margaret.
Have a great day, and I'll hopefully see you soon.
All right.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
As I mentioned at the beginning of this call, this is our 20th episode for the 2024 season for the Life Behind Bars podcast that I started kind of in the early spring. If you really enjoyed this discussion and all our other discussions, quick little plug, go to our website, www.bicycleindiana.org, and join, become a member. Without your support and membership, we can't do what we do. So keep us rolling and join, and you can listen in to all these great discussions that we've had for the 2024 year. Can you believe it? The new year is just around the corner. Happy holidays. I hope everyone has a really, get it, great holiday, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year, everything above. Really excited about the 2025 event in January. Another quick little plug. Don't forget, we have our annual Statehouse Day, which is on January 28th, 2025. Downtown Indianapolis at the State House. Information is on our website, Facebook, social media platforms. Please join. It's free. It's a huge event for us to, one, just get together and advocate for bike safety education, and hopefully talk to other individuals, like-minded people, about how we can improve and break down barriers for bike and even pedestrian things. So stay tuned. Hope everyone has a great rest of your week. But yeah, take care.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. We hope you really enjoyed this podcast. For more information about our organization and other future podcasts, visit www.bicycleindiana.org. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you have a really great day.